Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on aspartame update when we come back. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity from bank deposits to medical visits has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. The federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American. That's according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. Now, closer to home, our state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us, and a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that the state agencies of New York operated 1,776 separate data systems. Those systems contain 10,799 categories of information about New York residents, and every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. This information about you is being gained from 63 sources, and this information is being gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how your government, your bank, your insurance company, business and industry is obtaining all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for anyway? Well, knowing how this information is being gathered and what information is being stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, while you're at it, why don't you ask for our free general law CD package? And let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto our archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org. All right, last time we were talking about this thing called aspartame over here, and what can you do to get aspartame out of your body? And how is this detoxification done? I think it would be worthwhile to take a look at the history of aspartame so that we can see how government and the Searle and Monsanto companies have worked together to get this product into the marketplace, and why it is that government working with the industry over here is working against the best interests of you and me and everybody else. The story begins in 1969 with Dr. Harry Wasserman, W-A-I-S-M-A-N. Wasserman was a physician and biochemist, a professor of pediatrics at the University of Wisconsin. He was the director of the university's Joseph P. Kennedy Jr. Memorial Laboratory for Mental Retardation Research. He's also an expert on a disease called PKU. PKU is a genetic disorder resulting in brain damage if it's undetected. And Dr. Wasserman was approached by the G.D. Searle Company in 1969 to conduct a study on the PKU effects of aspartame using primates. So Dr. Wiseman went ahead and did the study using primates, and the results of Dr. Wasserman's study was that of the 7 infant monkeys being fed aspartame mixed with milk, 1 died after 300 days, and 5 others had grand mal seizures. Did you hear that? In 300 days of testing, just a little under a year, 10 months, he had 7 monkeys, 1 of them died, 5 of them had grand mal seizures. Now, remember in the last program, I said, you know, one of the symptoms that humans get from this is seizures, seizure disorder. Now, when a person has a seizure, they just blank out and go into convulsions. And it lasts for 2-3 minutes. Now, can you imagine driving your car down the road and you just blank out for 2-3 minutes? That's why I mentioned to you last time, you know, we don't know how many of these events transpire. But we knew as early as 1969 when we were working with this product called aspartame that that's what it did to monkeys. Now, Searle detected the negative findings, and then they deleted those negative findings before they submitted Dr. Wasserman's study to the Food and Drug Administration as evidence of aspartame safety. So the Searle company took the report, doctored it up, and put it in. And they didn't say anything about these grand mal seizures or the monkey dying. They said, hey, this is good stuff. Searle changed their story when the 1975 FDA Investigative Task Force discovered the withheld information. Searle's reply was that this study was done by an independent scientist and therefore was not valid. They further claimed that there was no evidence that aspartame caused seizures. Dr. Wasserman died unexpectedly in March of 1971 before he could complete all of his studies, but the testing done by him was considered pivotal by the FDA in 1975, meaning that the test is so important that it must be repeated if it's found to be invalid. And yet in 1980, the FDA said that it did not need to rely upon Dr. Wasserman's study. Searle then awarded a grant to Ann Reynolds to do a primate study to refute Wasserman's findings. However, she only evaluated plasma aspartic acid levels and not the aspartame neurotoxicity or seizure potentiation. And according to congressional records, she refused to testify at congressional hearings. Primates were never again used in subsequent tests, and that is regrettable because most of the other studies submitted by Searle to the FDA utilized rodents. Now, rodents must be fed at least 60 times more aspartame to approximate the equivalent intake effect on humans. Public outcry erupted over a proposed ban of saccharin when it was discovered that the rats used in the test cited had been fed the equivalent of 800 cans of diet soda per day. Even that would not take into consideration the incapacity of humans to metabolize substances in a manner similar to rodents. Now, primates are a little closer in the genetic makeup to humans than are rodents. Some animals are able to take certain toxins and dispose of them. Rats can dispose of this aspartame more readily than humans can. Let me give you an illustration. In the Bible, in Leviticus 3, verse 17, God tells us, that's you and me, he says, you shall eat no manner of fat. Now, there's a good reason for that. People couldn't understand that 3,000 years ago, but today we understand it because of cholesterol. I mean, hell, there isn't anybody out there that would tell you to go down to the butcher shop and get 5 pounds of suet, take it home, boil it up, and drink it. Everybody tells you, well, don't consume a lot of animal fat. Avoid that. Causes high cholesterol levels and gives you cardiovascular disease. Now, conversely, dogs, for instance, wolves, coyotes, buzzards, they not only eat fat, they eat dead carrion, they can eat dead pigs, they can eat all the fat they want to. And there's a very logical reason for that. They have high quantities of hydrochloric acid in their stomachs and digestive systems, and they can handle fat, they can break it down. Humans don't have that. That's what the problem is with humans. That's why God told you not to eat animal fat. You don't have what you need to break it down. Now, there's one exception to that. One exception. It's butter and milk fat. In cows, there's an enzyme in natural raw milk that breaks down the butter fat, and you not only can eat it and digest it, it's because of that enzyme. You don't have it in your body. You have to get it from the cow. The cow has it in the milk. Now, here's what our problem is. We pasteurize all of our milk, which kills the enzyme. And that's why many of you people out there are lactose intolerant and why you're suffering from cardiovascular disease and stroke. It's because when you kill the enzyme and you drink milk or eat butter, you can't digest it, so it builds up in your arteries and plugs them up. We call this atherosclerosis, and you die from coronary. And, you know, it's just cause and effect. No big deal. It's the way that works. Now, this Dr. Wasserman over here said, well, what he'll do is he'll test this aspartame on primates, which is pretty close to humans. And Searle, they're not dumb people, you know. They said, well, we want to have a better result, so we're going to use rats to test it because we know that rats can digest it. So if you wanted to do a test on fat to see how humans can digest fat, you'd feed fat in prodigious amounts to dogs. And then you come back and say, gee, fat is safe for humans because we tested it on dogs, and none of the dogs suffered any ill effects. Well, excuse me? Huh? Let's wake up and smell some coffee here, kids. Now, the FDA in 1970 banned cyclamate during a time of serious questions about the safety of saccharin, leaving a wide open field for aspartame. Robert Shepplin, acting director of the FDA's Toxicological Services Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition, is quoted as saying in part that the decision to ban cyclamate was more a matter of politics than science. Meetings were not held, things were not pursued, work was not done, the people who were involved at the time were inadequate to do the job, so said the Washington Post in May of 1989. Dr. John Olney, research psychiatrist at the Department of Psychiatry and the Washington University School of Medicine, 1971. Dr. Olney informed Searle that aspartic acid causes holes in the brains of mice that he was testing. Ann Reynolds, a researcher hired by Searle, confirmed Dr. Olney's findings in a similar study. In 1974, Dr. Olney and consumer interest attorney James Turner met with Searle representatives. This is prior to the FDA's approval in 1974. To discuss Dr. Olney's 1971 study. The Searle representative said that Olney's animal studies raised no health problems. Now, Searle did not notify the FDA of Dr. Olney's tests until long after the approval of NutraSweet. In fact, no tests were ever submitted to the FDA by Searle ruling out this type of neurotoxic effect. And it's important to note, according to law, that it is not enough for a company to show that their product is not dangerous, but they must establish to the FDA's satisfaction that their product is safe for human consumption. Searle had submitted 13 tests in an attempt to establish that aspartame did not cause genetic damage, but memos from public records show that the FDA scientists who reviewed the tests found serious deficiencies in all of them. Nevertheless, the FDA officials decided the tests could be relied upon to establish the safety of aspartame, although documents show that they admitted that there had been numerous problems with the veracity of the tests. Let me pause right there and ask you, do you honest to God believe that the company that is producing the product should conduct the tests to determine its safety and efficacy? Doesn't that sound like a conflict of interest to you? Well, that's the way this game is played. I just thought I'd point that out to you. Now, you know, if I wanted to demonstrate the value of my school, I would like to do an evaluation and test and submit my findings on my school to the Bureau of Vocational Education and let them evaluate me and my school based upon my studies and my findings. I wouldn't want to have some outside outfit come in and evaluate my school and make that report. Would you? Wouldn't you rather do it yourself? Now, I have to say, you know, in all candor, that if you wanted to have an objective report about my school, then you're going to have to go to somebody that's outside the school, somebody that doesn't have a financial interest in it, somebody that isn't going to benefit from his report. And that's why we hired the FDA. That's why we have government as the neutral arbiter between the public and this company. And their job is to evaluate Searle's claim that their product is safe and effective and it's good for us and isn't going to harm us. And we rely upon that information. What I wanted to point out to you is that isn't the way the game is played. Now you know. In 1975, a large task force was formed. It was headed by the FDA lead investigator, Philip Brodsky, and assisted by the FDA toxicology consultant, Adrian Gross. They were charged with examining the original test material submitted by G.D. Searle. Now, the FDA decided that on the basis of the information given them by Searle, that aspartame appeared to be safe and granted approval for limited use. Then the FDA became very suspicious because it was noted that there were some serious side effects from several drugs produced by Searle. There were also the only studies indicating that aspartame consumption might have caused cancerous brain tumors in animals tested. The FDA decided to examine Searle's laboratory procedures, reporting practices, and some of the more important aspartame studies that were submitted. Now, Gross and Brodsky were charged with examining the original test material submitted by Searle. Now, the task force's investigation included the falsified data that Searle had previously submitted to the FDA to gain approval for their copper D IUD. Searle finally removed the IUD from the market in 1988 after losing a lawsuit, which cost them $9 million, despite their insistence of its safety. Well, the task force, after several months of investigation, submitted a 15,000-page document with a summary of more than 80 pages. Excerpts from the conclusions of their summary, we have discovered serious deficiencies, they said, in Searle's integrity in conducting high-quality animal research to accurately determine or characterize the toxic potential of its products. Now, they've got a product here, and they're having problems with it, and so they're covering up their research, and then they're dummying up the reports so that they can get the FDA to approve it. Now, that's the way the game is done. Let me repeat that. I mentioned it to you the other day. Let me run it by you again. The major multinational corporations like G.D. Searle or Merck or Pfizer, Monsanto, when they want to get a product approved by the FDA, they have to conduct tests. So they conduct the tests themselves, and then they submit their test results with their testing modality to the FDA. They say, well, here's what we did, and here's the results that we got, and the product's perfectly safe, and it's effective, and so on. And the FDA says, well, okay, if that's true, well, then that's fine. We'll accept that. I would contend that that's flawed right from its inception, but, you know, that's the way the game is played. Now, when problems developed and the investigators from the FDA looked into it, they found out that Searle had falsified the data that they put in, and then they falsified the testing modalities that they used. Now, don't you think that somebody ought to be prosecuted here, that somebody ought to go to jail Well, they don't. They never put these people in jail. In fact, what happens is that, let's say the FDA director or the FDA scientist or investigator that's working for this, he's actually going to retire from the government service and go to work. And guess where he's going to go to work? For Monsanto or GD Searle or Pfizer or one of these companies. Last year they were regulating, and this year they're working for them. This is called the revolving door. That's a revolving door. Now, I'm not here to report this to you because I think that you're going to vote somebody out of office and we're going to reform this. I think that it's corrupt. I think it's based upon fraud. I don't think anybody's going to straighten it up or correct it. But now that I'm aware of it, I don't buy their products. I don't do business with them. They're liars and thieves. They've demonstrated it for decades. And it's not very likely that they're going to reform. Most of the people in the country believe in it, and they're ignorant and don't know what's happening to them or why. And so I thought, well, I'll report on the story and I'll tell you. Here's what's happening to you. You got a product out here called aspartame. It's not the only product, by the way, that you're having a problem with. It's saccharin, aspartame, cyclamates, acylfame, and sucralose. I mean, they're all a problem, these artificial sweeteners. And they go under various trade names, and then the Congress comes along and refuses to force these companies on their labeling practices to tell you what's in the product. Now, why is that? Well, they know full well that if you read the label and you saw what was in there, you might not buy it. They don't want us to know what's in it. So anytime that you're buying a packaged product, let's say you're going to buy a package of Nabisco and Oreo cookies, and you read the label. Well, that's what they admit is in it, and then what isn't admitted that could be in it, like MSG or aspartame or sucralose or something else, what they do is they use a different name for it. They'll use natural flavor, for instance, in place of MSG. Well, natural flavor and MSG are the same thing. But see, when it says natural flavor, right away in your mind you say, oh, they squeezed the berries and got the juice out of the berries and then used that berry juice to sweeten or to flavor this product. No, no, that's not what natural flavor means at all. Natural flavor is a copyrighted trade name for MSG. And they've got about 15 different names for MSG so that you can't figure out that it's got MSG in it. So you have to know what those 15 buzzwords are that are on those labels. And then the labels and the ingredients are in very fine print so that if you have to wear glasses or you don't see very well, then you can't read the label. And so I take my 10-power loop glasses. See, I collect coins, and I got this special pair of glasses, and they fit right on my head. And it's got a visor, and it pulls it down, and it's a 10-power loop. God, I use it for reading contracts and labels on cans. So in 1976, it is significant to note that the Searle employee responsible for reviewing most of the reproduction studies had only had 1 year of prior experience working on population dynamics of cotton tail rabbits while employed at the Illinois Wildlife Service in order to prepare him for his title of senior research assistant in teratology, that's called fetal damage. Searle bought him books to read on the subject and also sent him to a meeting of the Teratology Society. This qualified him to submit 18 of the initial tests to the FDA. Here, let me read this to you again. Searle now has to make a report to the FDA. So here's what they do. It is significant to note that the Searle employee who was responsible for reviewing most of the reproduction studies had only had 1 year of prior experience working on population dynamics of cottontail rabbits while he was employed by the Illinois Wildlife Service. So he was working for the Fish and Game up in Illinois studying cottontail rabbits. Searle hires him, brings him in, gives him a title. So this guy's probably been to college. So he's got a bachelor's degree, and maybe he's a wildlife biologist. So they want him to come in and write a report on teratology, which means fetal damage. Fetal, that is a baby in the womb damage. And Searle bought him books to read on the subject and also sent him to a meeting of the Teratology Society. So they sent him to a meeting. Now he's got his credentials. This is the way they credentialed this guy. This guy is as useless as tits on a boar hog. But, you know, if I had done something like that, now I'm a high school dropout, and I don't have any college training or education at all, and I run a law school. And I was in a meeting the other day, and some guy asked me, Mr. Gordon, what qualifies you to be a law school teacher? And I said, well, 25 years of experience, 68 cases that I've done in court, and 58 wins. That's what qualifies me. He didn't say any more. You know, old Henry Ford only went to the sixth grade, but I don't think anybody would say Henry Ford was stupid now, would they? Well, anyway, this qualified this guy to submit 18 of the initial tests to the FDA, in addition to training an assistant and two technicians. He certainly must have kept them busy because Searle claimed that 329 teratology examinations were conducted in just 2 days. All right, let's try that out. They came in here and testified that 329 tests and examinations were conducted by these three people in 2 days. So let's take 329 and divide that by two. And that means they did 164 and a half a day divided by three people. That means that each one of them did 54 tests each per day. And let's divide that by 8 hours in a day. And that's 6.8 tests an hour. Huh? What do you think about that? He estimated that he himself examined about 30 fetuses a day, but officials for the Center for Food and Applied Nutrition could never determine how that was possible. The results of the task force's investigation of aspartame and several other sterile drugs were presented and discussed in a Senate Subcommittee on Labor and Public Welfare meeting on April 8th of 1976. They said, we have found instances of irreverent or unproductive animal research where experiments have been poorly conceived, carelessly executed, or inaccurately analyzed or reported. The cumulative findings of problems within and across the studies that we investigated reveal a pattern of conduct which compromises the scientific integrity of the studies. That's legalese for saying the studies were just a bunch of BS. Some of the most revealing findings, many of the test animals fed aspartame developed large tumors. These tumors had been cut out and the animals returned to the study. In some cases, the tumors were not examined for malignancy nor reported to the FDA. Searle's representatives, when caught and questioned on these irregularities, stated that these masses were in the head and neck areas and prevented the animals from feeding. Some of the tumors reported autopsied in the original laboratory workbooks were not included in the final report sent to the FDA. In several cases, animals that were reported as dead were later reported as alive again. Dr. Adrian Gross, the investigative consultant to the 1975 task force, later said that the 16-month review was at best irrelevant because the group was limited to only analyzing whether Searle had lied about the data in its tests. They had been directed not to examine the methodology since FDA had already accepted the validity of the tests. Well, now that we find out that these tests are flawed and that they were submitted based upon fraud and lies, don't you think that somebody ought to say, well, we're going to reject these test findings, and if you want to do this over again and then submit true findings, we'll listen to you a second time? What would you think if I did something like that? Why is it that Monsanto and G.D. Searle and the FDA can do these kinds of acts, and we don't seem to think that there's a problem with it? But if I did that or you did that or somebody else, you know, somebody would lock us up, wouldn't they? I mean, if I phonied up, if I made an application to the state here, and let's say I wanted to license my school, and then I lied about, you know, how many teachers we have and what our program is all about, and I filed a lot of false documents and one thing and another, what do you think they would do to me if I did that? Senator Edward Kennedy stated that the extensive nature of the almost unbelievable range of abuses discovered by the FDA on several major Searle products is profoundly disturbing. That's legalese for saying, you know, these people are totally out of it. Well, it's a halfway point here. Let me remind you that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log, schedule, and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, go to our archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we're citing here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're looking at the history of the aspartame story. Going back to 1969, when Dr. Wasserman was first hired by the Searle Company to do a primate study, he did it, and he reported that in 300 days of experimentation, out of 7 monkeys, 1 died, and 5 others all had grand mal seizures, feeding these monkeys now with milk and aspartame. Now, he started with 7 monkeys, 6 out of 7 have some kind of problem. 1 died, and 5 of them have the equivalent of a grand mal seizure or epilepsy. Now, Searle covered that up and hired another woman to do the studies. Now, this tells us another thing about scientific studies. Scientists, like whores, are in business to make a living. Now, that doesn't mean that all whores are wicked, evil people. You know, they're just girls out there doing their thing, you know, so they can pay the rent. Now, as it turns out, what it is that they're doing is a criminal activity which is condemned by the creator of the universe. He said, you know, there shall not be found a whore or a sodomite in Israel. He said, I don't like that. It's against the law. I'm going to make a law against it. Now, there's a thing here called bribery and fraud and lying and chicanery. It's against the law to take a bribe. And that's what's happening here. These scientists that Searle is hiring, if they put their minds to it, they have the training. They're not ignorant, dumb people. They could conduct this study just like Dr. Wasserman did. Now, you know, you'd think that if the Searle Company had your best interests at heart, they would say, well, let's redo this Wasserman study. You know, it may cost us a few bucks, but, you know, we'll do another study. And then that would solve the problem for us, wouldn't it? Now, if they took 7 monkeys in there, fed them aspartame for 300 days, and 7 of them went into the study, and 7 of them come out of the study, and they don't seem to have any problems, you know, that may not be as big a study or as all-encompassing as it ought to be, but it would be, you know, somewhat reassuring. But when I get the report back and it says, out of 7 monkeys in a 10-month study, 1 died and 5 of them have grand mal seizures, only 1 of them comes through the study without any symptoms, I say to myself, do I want to eat that? Would you want to eat that? You know, just take something other than aspartame. Just take any substance that you wanted, and you feed it to 7 monkeys, 1 of them dies, 5 of them have grand mal seizures. Would you want to ingest that? Now, based on, this was 1976 now, based on the serious concerns and the findings of the 1975 task force, the FDA instigated another investigation to look into 15 questionable studies submitted by Searle. Now, Searle has now lied to the FDA 3 times. They have filed false information 3 times. This is the 3rd investigation here between 1969 and 76. Now, let's suppose for the sake of our discussion, I filed some papers with the state and I lied. And the state comes back, they catch me, and then they say, okay, you've got to resubmit this because you lied to us. So I come back with the 2nd set of papers, and I lie the 2nd time. And then they investigate me and find out, hey, Gordon, you've lied twice to us. And so we're going to invalidate your application, and you're going to have to file with us again. So I go out and I file another. This is my 3rd time. I'm filing for the 3rd time. And I lie for the 3rd time, and then they investigate me, and they found out, gee, now 3 times in a row, this guy Gordon has filed with our agency of government, and he's lied to us 3 out of 3 times. Don't you think at about that point in time you ought to reject their application and say, no, you can't do this. You cannot participate here. That isn't the way the game is played, but I just thought I'd bring that to your attention. I don't know what would happen. I've never heard of any business. I don't think that if I went down to the city here and put an application in for a business license and I lied to them 3 times that they would let me come back a 4th, 5th, and 6th time to make my application. Do you think maybe they might prosecute me? You know, for filing these lying documents, you know, committing perjury. Evidently, that doesn't happen with Searle. They were investigated 3 times, found out they lied 3 times. No, nobody in the report here that I'm reading to you was ever brought up on any criminal charges. And Searle goes ahead and they get their licensing for it, and you've got aspartame in 6,000 products today. All right, now in 1977, a five-member FDA task force headed by FDA veteran inspector Jerome Bressler were given three studies to examine, and the UAREP, a private group from Rockville, Maryland, examined the other 12 studies. Searle paid the UAREP $500,000 to evaluate their studies. Their conclusions, the FDA task force, were, now here's the conclusions that they came to. Some of the test animals had developed many uterine tumors that Searle admitted were due to the DKP-related dosages. The higher the dosage, the higher the incidence of uterine tumors. Some of the blood tests submitted by Searle had been falsified. Searle claimed that they had experienced some problems with their instruments and therefore had substituted the results from another unrelated animal test. Okay, hang on a minute. Let me read that to you again. Here you are. This is your fourth time around. Now, you've been investigated and found out you lied three times before. Okay, no hard feelings. We're going to go ahead and let you resubmit your findings. They paid $500,000, the Searle company, which to them, you know, is less than pocket change, to have a new study done. So the FDA now takes a look at this fourth study. And they found out that some of the blood tests submitted by Searle had been falsified. This is the fourth time now that they have falsified the documents and the reports and their findings. They've done four studies, and they've lied four times in a row. How do you like that? Huh? Searle claimed that they had experienced some problems with their instruments, and therefore they substituted the results from some other totally unrelated animal test. Okay, so let's think about that for a minute. We're testing aspartame. At the same time that we're testing aspartame, we're also studying fat in other animals. So I'm having problems over here with my aspartame lab rats. So I go over to my fat testing lab rats over here, which is totally unrelated to aspartame, and I lift the results out of my fat tests and put it into my aspartame tests, and then I submit that. Do you people call that science? Honest to God, do you believe that? Well, okay. Now, it was later discovered that in some of the studies, the UAREP pathologists who were charged with examining the test results withheld their negative findings and submitted only the most favorable reports to the FDA. Now, I wonder why they would do that. Let's think about that one for a minute. Searle goes out here and hires you and five other guys to conduct this test. So there's six of you people working here. And then Searle pays you money. And then when you get through, you have to file a report with the FDA and say, well, what did you discover while you were trying this aspartame out on these lab rats? And so some of the lab rats died, so you withhold that information. And some of the other lab rats had no effect at all, and so you report the favorable results to the FDA, and the unfavorable results, that is the dead rats, you don't say anything about. Do you call that science? Well, I would call that a bribe. I could understand that, sure. If the Searle company came to me and said, Mr. Gordon, if we pay you $1 million, would you do a study and lie for us? Well, yeah, I think I would do a study and lie for $1 million. Sure. So would a lot of other people. Now, that being the case, don't you think that that's self-serving? That's the way the game is being played. Now, there probably are some people out there that have integrity, and they maybe you can't buy them off. I had an old-timey gold broker one time, and he told me, he said, you never want to trust somebody with any more money than you can afford to lose. Never trust somebody with more than you can afford to lose. You know, so you might trust somebody with $5,000 and he probably wouldn't steal that from you. You might try him with $10,000 and he might not steal that from you. But the higher the stakes, the more likely this guy is at some point in time. You know, you can trust him with $1 million, $2 million, $10 million, $3 billion, you know. Now, I can understand that angels and Jesus probably wouldn't steal from you, but all the rest of us out here are liars and thieves, and so I would suggest that you be cautious. Caveat emptor, you know, is the rule that we follow. In other cases, the pathologists reading tissue slices completely missed cancerous brain tumors. Excuse me. Pathologists reading tissue slides missed cancerous brain tumors? I don't believe that for a minute. You know, I'm a plumber, and if I were reading these slides, and you said, George Gordon, the plumber, totally missed these cancerous tumors. Yeah, you could say, well, yeah, he wouldn't recognize cancer, you know, from a $3 Federal Reserve note. But I don't believe that a pathologist. Now, a pathologist is somebody who's trained in doing biopsies and looking for, you know, in dead bodies and taking them apart and finding out cause and effect. You know, that's what the guy's there for. So, you know, if I had a plumber and he went out on a job to investigate why it is that you had a leak, I would expect him to come back with a report. I don't believe that any competent plumber, anybody who's a member of the union who's a plumber, couldn't go out and say, well, the reason that there was a leak is because it rusted through at the threads, or because the pipe was broken in two, or there was a crack, or it froze and broke, or, you know, we come back and make a report. These are pathologists now. They're hiring trained professionals. Trained professionals don't miss things like that. I don't believe it for a minute. So when they don't report that, then that tells me that they were being bribed. They were on the take. And remember, this is the fourth time here. And in one study alone, it was found that there had been malignant brain tumors in 12 animals, but the UAREP had reported to the FDA that just three animals had brain tumors. Okay. Now, when they went back and audited these results and checked them out, now they've been caught lying now four times. This is, we're up to 1977 now. Between 69 and 77, four studies by Searle have been conducted. They've made application to the FDA, and four times out of four, they've been investigated, and four times out of four, they have been found to be lying. And more than likely paying bribes. Now, we can't go back and say, well, they were bribing these scientists. We don't have the canceled checks. We don't have any evidence that they were bribing them. But you can see by the results here that they were taking bribes, for crying out loud. You know, wake up. Let's smell some coffee here and use our common sense. This is as phony as a $3 bill. You know it. I know it. And get this. Everybody at the FDA that's involved in this, they know it. All of the Searle people involved in this, they know it. All of the scientists, they know it. All of these people are lying through their teeth. They're all taking bribes. They all know they're corrupt, and they love it. And then the ultimate end of this is that we're going to get this poison out here in the marketplace in 6,000 products that you and I buy off the supermarket shelves, which then in turn cause 92 symptoms, which then in turn kills about 100,000 people a year, and nobody can prove it. Now, talk about a perfect crime. And it's a crime that's being covered up by government at the same time. You know, and the FDA isn't the only agency, by the way, that's doing this. Hell, there's a bunch of agencies here. They call it the revolving door. And the Securities and Exchange Commission is supposed to be regulating Citicorp and Bank of America and J.P. Morgan. They don't. What they do is when they break the law, these companies break the law, they turn their head the other way. Now, let Martha Stewart make $50,000 on insider trading. And by God, that woman's going to jail. She's not an insider. And she sure as hell not going to get a job, you know, with the SEC or somebody else. But, you know, let Goldman Sachs go out here and rape, rob, and pillage, or let them steal billions of dollars like they did over in Greece by hiding the Greek debt and doing the deal in derivatives. Well, that's okay. It's okay if Goldman Sachs screws the taxpayers out of $10 billion. But, my God, if Martha Stewart dings somebody for $50,000, and come to find out, Martha Stewart didn't even ding anybody for $50,000. She sold her stock and then lied to the FBI so that she didn't get the guy that told her to sell the stock because it was going to tank the next day. So she lied to the FBI. They got her for perjury, trying to protect her friends. Now, here's a company that's out here paying bribes that ultimately ends up killing, and get this, if it's $100,000 a year, and this product has been on the market now, let's see, since 1981, 2001, hell, next year it'll be 30 years, so it's 29 years. Well, 29 times 100,000 is 2,900,000 people have died as a result of this aspartame. And I wouldn't say just aspartame and blame it all on Searle. There's five or six of these, saccharin, aspartame, cyclamates. And then there's one here called sulfame, allyl sulfame, and sucralose. I suppose they're all one probably just as bad as the other, but the moral of the story is. How do they get this stuff out here in the marketplace? I mean, how do they accomplish this? Well, hell, they just come in here and lie about it. That's all. Now, so far, they, you know, from 69 to 81, they were unable to get it in there until Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney, you know, the two whiz kids from the neocons of the Bush administration, remember? Well, they were also in the Nixon and Ford administrations, you know, back in the 70s. And this guy, Donald Rumsfeld, you know, he was instrumental in getting this Iraq war kicked off. Remember that? And Dick Cheney? I mean, there's a pair to draw to. You got the Iraq war, and you got this aspartame over here, and you got Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld to thank for it. And they're not the only ones. I'm not singling those two guys out, you know, as being the two culprits over here, kind of like, you know, with the Kennedy assassination, you know, they line up the lone gunman. Ah, hell, this government is so corrupt that there's thousands of people involved in here that are on the take. And these scientists are on the take. And the Searle executives are on the take. And the FDA investigators are on the take. Well, not all of them. I mean, you know, they did their job and they said, hey, this stuff is crap and it ought to be thrown out. You know, they did their job. But what happened at the FDA up at the higher levels? We'll find that out as we progress along here. That they're going to take these studies and they're just going to ignore them. That's what they're doing. All right. Now, in January of 1977, the FDA formally requested the U.S. Attorney Samuel Skinner to conduct a grand jury investigation of the tests on two Searle products, NutraSweet and Aldactone, a drug to treat high blood pressure. Samuel Skinner removed himself from the case 2 months later because of anticipated employment with the law firm of Sidley & Austin, who at the time were defending Searle in the investigation. In 1989, Mr. Skinner acknowledged that he may have made mistakes in his handling of the NutraSweet investigation. Oh, my God. Can you believe this? Oh, I think I might have made some mistakes. Hell, he didn't make any mistakes. He knew exactly what he was doing. He's going to go get a job with the G.D. Searle Company. He's working for the Department of Justice. He's about to get a job here with the G.D. Searle Company. It's going to pay him buku bucks. What they're going to do is they're just going to buy him off. That's all. It's kind of like Congress. Just buy him off. Now, no one can say that any of our politicians are taking bribes. They're not bribes. They're campaign contributions. And the Supreme Court just weighed in on this the other day, and they said, hell, we think that corporations should be able to give as much in the way of campaign contributions as they want to political candidates. Let's apply this to Monsanto and the G.D. Searle Company. Instead of spending $500,000 on a test, why don't we give the $500,000 to somebody in the Congress or the President or somebody else over here to approve it? Huh? By the way, just to bring you up to date here, the on this healthcare initiative that the President and the Democrats are trying to get through, you know, irrespective of what side you're on here on this, I don't want to muddy the waters here. I'm not arguing one way or the other, but on this healthcare thing, the drug manufacturers here in the United States, over the next 10 years, if this healthcare bill passes, there's about 16 drug companies here in the United States. Those 16 drug companies are going to split up about $1 trillion over 10 years. 16 companies. That's how valuable this healthcare initiative is to those 16 companies. They've spent approximately $500 million in lobbying for this healthcare initiative. $500 million. And they're going to get a trillion. Well, a trillion is 1,000 billion, and a billion is 1,000 million. So, I mean, these guys have put in a pittance. They should have just spent that amount of money and just bought the Congress, which I imagine that's probably about what they've done. If they would just take that money and go over to the Republicans, you know, guys like Mitch McConnell, and say, look, Mitch, wake up. We'll just pay you $10 million and vote for it. I think they could go over to David Bonner and say, hey, Dave, here's $10 million. Shut your mouth. Vote for this. Because that's what's coming now that the corporations have carte blanche to donate to these political campaigns. Hey, I'm about out of time here, kids. We're going to have to cut this off here and remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We're open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and it can all be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, I'm out of time. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.